Happy Friday. This feels like one of the longest weeks of my life.
Agreed.
I don't know why, but thanks for being with us, Mara Carabello and Greg Hughes on this Valentine's edition. We have nothing loving in here, but we'll call it the Valentine's edition.
Feeling the love.
Hey, before we dig into politics, are you doing anything special, or are you one of those, like, Valentine's Day is stupid things, Greg?
Let me just guess. Greg, I bet, planned Valentine's Day months in advance and just you know just showers people with gifts and thoughtful notes.
I hear your mockery. You know, it is. I will just admit, I am a Neanderthal. I'm sure by Sunday I will have come up with something awesome, but here Friday afternoon, I don't have that.
You've got a couple days. And Mara, if I remember correctly, are you the date planner at your house?
Okay, I just have to own my hypocrisy now. No, of course not. Chris is going to come through with something for the weekend, and I will be great. I'll be grateful for it. I'm horrible.
I'm the same. My husband and I usually, whether it's our anniversary, half the time birthdays, Valentine's Day, we just shake on it and say, please don't do anything. We are going skiing this weekend, and we met skiing, so that's hot, right?
That's good. Yeah. Yes, nice. That's good.
Okay. We got to talk about some serious issues that have nothing to do with Valentine's Day, so let's rename this
Comeuppance Friday.
Comeuppance Friday. No, let's not call it that. The Utah legislature has been digging into some interesting issues, and we also have an impeachment hearing that's going on. What do we want to start with? Which one's making everyone more excited?
Let's start with the legislature. We're in the middle. Mm-hmm. We're halfway through.
We are at the halfway mark.
And the quickest legislative session in America.
Yeah. So starting out the week, this feels honestly like a month ago, but Paris Hilton was here testifying on Utah's Capitol Hill. Does it matter that people like Paris Hilton come and talk issues? Does it sway you at all, Mara?
Okay, so I'm going to start by giving credit where credit is due. Okay. She used her celebrity, and this is a substantive bill. It has consensus. It's meaningful. And it really matters. And good for anyone who has platforms and celebrity and will use it to do something important. But I want to pivot to where I was shocked. So the Twitter patient around a celebrity coming up. Now, again, add a boy for Paris Hilton.
Yeah.
But watching the members of our House and Senate fall over each other.
They were so
and
excited.
Tweet and just be astonished and all the adjectives about how amazing she was. I mean, I'll just say there have been advocates that have been advocating for this bill for years. And I just ask our esteemed elected officials, you know, pick out a couple of extraordinary Utahns who are testifying every day in front of them. You hear amazing. I mean, Greg, when he was speaker, you hear amazing stories
from people
who are talking about their own cities that they live in, maybe their neighbors, and just the bravery that it takes sometimes to speak that truth there. I'm going to encourage them to maybe tweet out about some of those rock stars from Utah too. I mean, the stars in the eyes were quite something.
This is a difficult topic because you don't want to demean the topic in which Paris Hilton arrived.
Yes.
It is absolutely. So I'm going to follow Mara's lead here, which feels intuitively wrong to follow your lead. But I will say this, to the extent that she had an experience that she had the courage and that she wanted to share and that she wants to see change, I do applaud that. I will say that pop culture has hit a whole new level in America and in the Utah State Senate. I always called the Senate the House of Lords, the old and the slow, okay? I'm now convinced they all have TMZ as an app on their phone. They were just falling over Paris Hilton. Like, it was the biggest deal in the world. They were giddy. I mean, I was a little surprised.
She's young and pretty, but she's not that young anymore. I think she's almost 40, like the rest of us, right?
Wow, that's
But, TMZ standard. I think it is an important issue, although I should note there were a lot of pictures tweeted this week of Sarah Fry, too, which I think she's a brave, amazing young woman. They're talking about the DUI crash she was involved in. But, yes, definitely I think everyone had their Paris Hilton selfie.
Oh, people were enamored, to say the least, and I thought it was a little much, but the topic was good. So
the bill's moving through.
That's right.
Should it pass?
Yes. I think it will.
Yeah, okay. I do. I think those safeguards are appropriate. It's sad that it took this long, if you think about it. So
it is true. I want to talk a little bit about a bill yesterday. We were talking about the no-knock warrants ban is moving forward. This one, Greg, is on the table because we saw in the Breonna Taylor case a no-knock warrant there. We've had a couple pretty scary issues here in Utah connected to a no-knock warrant. I remember one where multiple police officers were shot. Are they a good idea? Is it time to get rid of them?
So it's a really tough issue. And I will tell you that one of the toughest parts about public safety is the lack of real data. You want to know that there are real problems that are happening that you can document and you know that you're addressing. You need a baseline. It's hard. The way that law enforcement agencies report certain statistics or data, how that can be politicized, and how pending cases are moving through the process and what you can say at different times. I'll just say this. The way that no-knock warrant bills have been pushed through, they want you to wait for a certain amount of time at the door. They want you to know how large the home may be, so you can estimate how long it would take from the furthest point to get to the door. A lot of them call that doorway the funnel of death, where that doorway is particularly dangerous. I think you'll hear from law enforcement that no-knock warrants, because of some of the danger on both sides, those that wouldn't know who's trying to invade their home in the hours they may come in versus maybe picking someone up when they're out going somewhere, and the danger to the people inside, but the danger to those officers. I'm convinced that you're not seeing it as much because of the problems that we have seen. We got to be careful how prescriptive people that don't understand law enforcement and the risks involved are telling law enforcement how they can do that. I think at this point, if you think someone's in imminent harm, I don't think it's an issue of they're going to flush the drugs down the toilet, so we want to catch them before they do it. That's not a high enough reason. That's not, that doesn't, Matt, reach a threshold where you would want to do something like that. I'm being told that those circumstances where that would happen would be only be when they think someone's in imminent danger, and to save them or to get to them is absolutely critical. Man, that's hard to understand or to be able to articulate from a public policy place only or citizen advocacy. It's a tough issue. I know the bill's going through the process. I will tell you, a lot of people are working with the bill sponsor, Representative Hall, to try and find a balance to what he's after.
I'm guessing Mara's had some conversations. And before we let you go, just in case you're new to the podcast or don't know much about Mara, her plus one when she goes to fancy events is a former Salt Lake City police chief, Burbank. So I'm guessing this is a conversation you have around the dinner table.
We do. We do talk about law enforcement a lot around the dinner table. And I think in a year that has a slew of law enforcement bills, this is among the best. And I think for me, particularly what's important is it changes protocols of police. So a lot of our solutions when we look at use of force particularly tend to be around gathering and education. Education is terrific, but in and of itself, it's not a change to the system. It's attempting to change the individual officer. And so let's go at that. I'm not trying to discourage those, but they're a certain kind of change. When we're talking about systemic change, which I really like about this bill, is we're at least talking about change. As Greg has said, I mean, we got to balance that. The reason I think this is important on no-knocks, as Greg has suggested, we're seeing fewer and fewer used. But this is a point in the moment between law enforcement and the public where we've chosen to use force. And I think we're relying on the discretion and law enforcement's good judgment in this, but it's this moment in time where use of force is warranted. And so I think asking for additional reflection and maybe even some additional bureaucracy before you choose a moment of use of force is a really powerful statement. Statistics are showing that this is a smart bill for Utah. We're a little slow in adopting some of these, and this would come from former Chief Burbank, and that this is a really solid way to insert less propensity for use of force into the system, which I really think is where we have to head.
I want to say this too, a little bit behind the curtain on process. When you watch politics, certainly if you're watching national politics and seeing the talking heads at night, you just think that there's two positions. There's a no-knock warrant, a ban, or you have to knock and you have to wait a certain amount of time versus law enforcement. They would say that's too dangerous and we shouldn't be able to do that. And so it's one side of a coin or the other. I will tell you this. I've watched law enforcement will sit down with bill sponsors. They will share their concerns and things that they want to make sure are addressed. And the bill sponsor, Representative Hall, he's going through that thorough process. And I just want listeners to know that you want that in public policy. You want to see where common ground can be found. And so it's a process that takes place that isn't as strident and it isn't so, live or die by the sword as we see national politics tend to be. So I think that it is going through that process right now. If they can find that common ground, it remains to be seen. But I do know it's it was, I think it was even on an agenda today, and it was held. The bill sponsor held it because of the continuing discussions that are going on, and that's always a good thing. I think when people are talking through a bill like that, that's what you want to see. That's what I think the public wants out of their representatives.
At the risk of being too agreeable on this Valentine's weekend, I think what you're right about too is I worry when we talk, you know, we're at a time of social consciousness about law enforcement and use of force, particularly in how Black and brown communities are being used. And as we have these discussions, I'm really hopeful that we don't continue to throw down blanket litmus tests of, are you for or against law enforcement? Are you for or against minority communities? Because those aren't productive conversations.
Absolutely not. And we have to remember that, as you mentioned, this is a risk, a no-knock warrant to the police officers. It's a risk to the people inside. So it's really a conversation about how do we make this safer? How do we make it smarter as we move forward for everyone? Because I don't think any police officer goes to work and wants to go serve a no-knock warrant and find out what the heck happens next either. It doesn't sound fun.
But this hard issue of dealing with the moment there is worthwhile, right?
Absolutely. That's
right. Let's stop with the low-hanging fruit already and get to some harder issues.
Let's talk about the hard issues of money here in the state of Utah. I've got several on the table here.
Money.
I don't think the bill has been submitted, but I do understand that there's a Utah tax break bill written. We have billions of dollars in the state. We've been doing well. We've got our coffers full. Mara, do we give some of the money back to the state of Utah, to the people who need it right now, who are suffering, or do we keep it because the rainy days are going to keep coming and no tax breaks for you?
So I'm on the minority side and saying if I were in charge, I would probably keep some of it. That's not what we're hearing for.
I'm so surprised.
For the state and our rainy day funds. But because I think that that is conservative economics. But really what we're hearing from leadership is that's not what's going to happen. They're really invested in putting forth a tax break. You said something intriguing, Heidi, that we've been watching is it's been out in the hallways for a couple of weeks that we are going to see this tax cut. It's a foregone conclusion. You hear it from all sides of leadership, and there is just no sign of it. There's no even protected notice. It's a curious thing.
Is it a trial balloon of sorts to see if we want it?
And part of it is final budget numbers come out next week, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's what they're waiting. They're fat with money right now. Maybe they're waiting for the last result.
Dollar bills, yo. Are you wanting to hand them out like Santa Claus, Greg?
Heidi, I am a supply sider. I believe that more of the dollars that are kept inside of households, people that are able to keep what they earn, they spend those dollars. They spend it on household, you know, their groceries, on their mortgage, on their rent, their kids' clothes. This economy is not run by what government spends. This economy is run by economic activity. And the more that people are able to keep more of those dollars and use those dollars in our economy, I think that that strengthens everything. And that's how we see our tax receipts grow. It's because people are prospering. And that's the general philosophy that I subscribe to. So I've never seen a tax cut I didn't like. Actually.
Are we going to see a tax cut? Where is it?
I don't know.
What are your
point
people
is true.
Doing?
I haven't seen,
why haven't they shown us?
I haven't seen it either. I haven't. In fact, I've actually heard the opposite.
You're on the outside now, Greg. They
no,
don't show
yeah,
you.
It, I don't. This I'm not. Rude. I'm not getting any of the memos anymore. I don't see where any of this is happening. But I did hear a scary one. When we saw the shutdown, the economic shutdown, there were businesses that were saying, "Excuse me, this isn't an economic downturn. This is by government mandate. We can't." Open our doors, our employees can't pay them if we don't have a business being operated. So we saw that the federal effort for the paycheck protection, what was it called?
PPP.
Yes, PPP, paycheck, it's a tongue
protection program. Yeah.
So the whole concept was, how do we bridge this time where really the whole country was shut down? How do you keep payroll? How are you able to keep things afloat? Because if everyone loses their job and your business goes out of business, the cost, the social cost of that is even higher. Well, the federal government's not looking to tax those dollars that are actually a loan, and there's some things you can do to where
basically
they'll forgive
if you used it to keep your lights on, pay your rent, and pay your employees, it was supposed to be tax-free.
Yeah,
on
but
the federal level until
federal
we didn't
level.
Think about it.
So if the state is talking about a tax cut, why are they talking about taxing the PPP assistance that was going on? I find that to be odd. I think that it wasn't money that the state generated or appropriated themselves, and to tax it would be, especially if you're talking about a tax cut at any point, I think that taxing that assistance is wrong. Frankly, again, that's not big government, and that's not an entitlement program. government stopped people from doing what they were doing. They just artificially said, or for whatever reason you want to attach to it, you can't stay open. You cannot do this. How do you keep your employees, how do you make payroll in circumstances like
so
that?
So I first join you in applauding the federal government for the actions that they took
on behalf of the
state.
Wow, this is a love affair. It is Valentine's Day.
So thank you for liking the federal government, Greg. This is a rare
day. Like them. I'm saying, look, they foisted this stupid plan on us. They better pay up.
What we should be watching is no action is action by our legislature, right? So when we talk about the fact that it looks like the state of Utah is going to make small businesses, particularly of which I am one, pay taxes on their PPP loans, I would just point out what you're watching for is not a bill that inserts that. It's in fact, that would be the status quo on income. It would be incumbent on our legislators to ask that that not happen. So what we're watching for is it to...
This is happening in quiet tax meetings.
Yes,
aside.
We need to have some voices stand up and say that wasn't the intent. This money is still needed. There are many businesses that are living in small increments right now. So that tax that you would revert back to the state's going to matter to these small businesses. And I think it really is a miss on the state's part if they make businesses and small businesses particularly pay the tax on this.
It is a confusing dialogue. We're talking about a tax cut. We're talking about taxing the PPP loans. And then at the same time, we have the $1.9 trillion stimulus, which is now looking more like $2.2 trillion. A lot of that money is said to go to states, counties, and municipalities. Mitt Romney was arguing that it should be more targeted because some states like Utah are doing well and don't need the money. In the Utah legislature, they're saying, we don't need the money, take it, you know, we don't even want it in the first place. Where do we stand on this? Because it stinks when everyone else gets money because you want the money. So do you take it anyways, or do you try to save the debt and say, we don't need it? I don't know what the answer is. It's a lot of money.
Well, what rubs me wrong is that you had some governors of some states that made decisions to shut down their economy in ways that I would argue is reckless. I think that absent the federal aid, I don't know what those states are going to do. They don't print money. They have to balance budgets. Yep. And they have shut down their economy to such a great extent. You've seen other states that were trying to manage this and not do that because they understood at the end of the day, only the tax revenue that arrives is how they pay their bills. To those states that decided, California, New York, that they were going to completely shut everything down, you're seeing these cities empty out. You're seeing these businesses closed at such a high rate. They won't be able to go forward without federal assistance. But you know what? I mean,
do we give them our federal assistance?
It's irresponsible. Their decisions were irresponsible. They, you know, everybody's been trying to grapple with this. Every state has to bail out the bluest and the most liberal states because they weren't watching any of this. And states that were mindful of this and not trying to destroy its own economy, I think it should be pared down. I would like to. I don't want this to be a big blue state bailout.
But do we say no to the money here in Utah? Do we say no, thank you?
I don't think we need it. No, I don't want to take more federal money, and I don't want to take it just because states like New York and California don't know how they're going to survive without it. But I think there's a point to be made that they can't survive without it. And guess what? I don't know where you got that. I don't know where the idea came. They could have a golden parachute like that.
It's not the time to be parochial. Or I don't like and peanut gallery on other people's. Because the reality is you don't know the situation, Greg. And
yeah, I do.
I mean, we're looking from the inside out.
I know the whole thing. I've watched it.
But have you watched it on your Fox News network?
I've been watching this thing. These poor businesses are all dying on the vine. It's just the saddest thing.
I was quiet.
And their infection rates aren't any higher than
any
other state.
I think in response to a global pandemic, in a goal being let's jumpstart our economy, let's get the money where it needs... Let's get the money where it needs. If a state like Utah, let's think in terms of these United States for a minute. And I mean, I hope they do that. And I don't see the Democrats, frankly, doing this either with the next round of issuing stimulus. Because, you know, people are getting it that don't need it. Individuals are getting it that don't need it. And others need a bigger gap. And so I do think in this round two, and what I suspect is versions of round three and four in the future, we need to be more strategic about need, with the end being getting the economy going again. Yeah. I don't think you can look at a society that decides that a bank is too big to fail, but in fact, there's a part of government structures or there's a part of propping up the rest of the economy that is too big to fail. So that philosophy of not just getting the economy moving. I mean, this is quintessential trickle down for you. These are going right into the pockets of those who need it. And so I think Utah should take a pass if they don't need it. I think there should be enough leeway in the law to maybe pick and choose a little, that it's not zero sum. You either take it all, you don't take it all. Because I think often, as you presented, Heidi, given those choices, sometimes you say, okay, I'll take all of it because I might need some of it, yeah. Right? Let's get a little more sophisticated about jump-starting
And I will say that as I'm thinking through this, there certainly are economic sectors in Utah that have been pummeled and that they have been harmed, and they are not okay.
For no reason of their own, right?
And no reason of their own. Our restaurant industry is absolutely one of those events. I mean, we used to have a lot of events. We got a lot of marriages, a lot of weddings going on. We had a lot of events going on in this state. Those companies are gone. They're not.
I know. Luckily, people know they can do them in their backyards now, which makes me feel bad for the businesses. But as a mom who might have to pay for weddings, I'm like, awesome. The swing set can be decorated perfectly.
I have a daughter. You know, I did not consider that, Heidi. I'm thinking, you know what? There might be a silver lining there. But no. So when I said, you know, we should not accept any of it, if you do see some of these industries, and they are out there, that have lost everything, or they can barely hang on if they can hang on, I think we should be sensitive to that. I'm just probably fatigued by some of the draconian decisions made in Illinois and New York and California that I think were problematic from the day they decided they were going to do what they did. And absent the government, federal government bailing them out, those states would, you know, they kind of made their bed.
Absent the federal government coming to our assistance, Greg, we would not be in the situation we are in.
I think the
state of Utah is who's considering taxing me, not the federal government.
We're going to see those numbers come out, the fiscal analyst numbers come out, and I think we're going to see a lot of our sectors that are healthy and are doing well. I don't think every state has their economic sectors doing the same, and I think it's largely from the decisions they made as a state early on. And so that's where I'm, you know, we did a lot of cutting last year. When I say we, the legislature did a lot of paring back of the budget.
Right.
There was a lot of hard decisions made trying to weather this storm. I don't think every state did that. And I do have a problem with trying to treat
agreed.
Them all equally.
We're well managed. We're a terrific state. We're also a growing Western state. So let's not
Thanks for noticing.
Yeah, let's not be naive.
Yeah. You two are so cute. I want to talk another bill here. See, it's the Valentine's. It's just got to come out. This one is a sensitive topic. It's one that a lot of people are wondering why it's even on the docket. But now that we're talking about it, we're going to. Transgender girls in sports. A House committee voted on Thursday to pass a measure seeking to stop transgender athletes from participating in girls' sports at Utah public schools. I'm just going to put it out there. I think it's got to be hard for girls in general, whether you're a transgender girl, regular girl, thinking about sports, because parents are coming and testifying and saying, you know what, I want my girl to be able to go out there and compete on an even playing field on the track field. And then a parent of a transgender girl is like, I need her to be able to compete. How do we do this? How do we make it make sense? How do we be fair, Mara? Is there a way to do it?
Sure. There's a lot of ways to do it in this area. So first, let me say from my seat, this is a message bill that is targeted at high school girls and is not called for and is harmful and will likely do more harm than good. And so I'll back away a little bit from that to say this is a body of thought that has had a lot of consideration by a lot of esteemed bodies from my point of view. You've got the Olympic Committee, who has standards and rules around trans athletes. You have the National Olympic, you have the International Olympic Committee, you have the NCAA, you have the high school sports associations, you have civil rights groups we have a large body of statute, if you will. They're not necessarily all laws, but we have a large body of esteemed groups who have studied and opined and made decisions on this complex issue. And why the state legislators would decide that this was their area of expertise, I think, is some of the fault in the bill. And I think that's, for me, why I call it a message bill. So I look and say message bills are when there is guidelines, rules, and statutes that have been put forth by able and specialized groups. And one of the other things you see in a message bill is it usually comes with a big red flag that says, hey, likely this is unconstitutional, and likely this might be something that the state will have to defend in a court of law. It goes hand in glove with the fact that there are already positions and issues on these complex topics. Absolutely, I agree it's a complex topic. I think this is a standard example of overreach by the legislature. I think it is in a message bill format, and to have it only focused on high school girls, I think is harmful and egregious. and something we should move away from as a matter of practice, as a matter of law, and certainly just our approach to our kids needs to be about the kids and not how we feel about larger environments. We have a lot of good, we already have a lot of good information about how to deal with trans students and how they want to participate in sports. And I say let the experts decide and the legislature should step off.
So Greg, why is this happening? Did something happen in an athletic event here in Utah that brought it to the forefront? Or why is this a bill that's made it
President Biden's executive order that was willing, they're looking at withholding federal funds for schools that are not accommodating for transgender athletes or transgender accommodations in our public schools, which would include sports. I'll just tell you this. If you have a kid in sports, sports are a big deal. It's part of the extracurricular activities. If we are going to take this issue, and we want to talk about a message, Bill, transgender females or transgender, a guy that thinks he's a girl and wants to play in those finite spots on a basketball team, a soccer team, or whatever it is, and takes the place of somebody else, it is a competitive disadvantage. It is wrong, and it is hard for these girls that want to compete in sports to be pulled into the political discussion about transgender people, athletes, where they fit in. And what I find, if we are going to focus on these children, and if we do find that we have students that are grappling with some pretty serious issues, and look, kids are cruel. I've been around this environment or this circumstance once in a high school. The parents and the student were so protective of the privacy of the student, and it was such an important issue and really a traumatic one on how to use a restroom. Forget sports. Forget about all those discussions that we're having about the competitiveness of sports, how about being able to use a restroom and not feel like you're a spectacle or not feel nervous or afraid or not want to be mocked? Those are the real issues, I believe, that these young people are confronting, that we have to do a better job of making sure that we can help those families and those students that are going through this. When I see the neon lights around, we want everyone to play sports, that's the message, Bill. That's where I think these students that are grappling with these issues are being used for a larger mission, message and a broader agenda that I don't think touch on the lives of those families and those students.
The state legislature is who's politicizing this issue. The issue is not political.
They didn't make it up.
They did make it up. There's no incident.
That executive order is what brought this upon them.
The bill sponsor cited no Utah incidents except for an out-of-state track meet. This is a hammer looking for a nail. And Greg, there's no position. The legislature at one point needs to acknowledge they have expertise not in this area. And we have really smart organizations like the High School Sports Association, like the NCAA, who have already made recommendations in this area. There's no need for people who don't have the expertise or the wherewithal on this issue to opine upon it. And so why does the legislature, is this highest and best use of your time? I hear over and over, 45 days, we've got a lot to cover. And to target high school girls in the 45 days you have, it's unconscionable.
It's not a target, it's to protect them. It's to protect the integrity of the sports in which they're playing. And I'll tell you this, you talk about the High School Activities Association. They've been embroiled in a lawsuit in terms of having girls football, where there is a desire to have girls football.
So and policy so they've been best the, to the people. Why isn't this representative courts? Just going and talking so, to the agencies that govern this?
Because I'll tell you, be proactive on this. When you have an executive order signed by Biden that says that they could withhold
Greg,
your federal funds.
We're talking about state politics. You can't roll up to everything too that the Democrats suck. That can't be the universal
answer.
They are creating an
atmosphere where sports can be interrupted, and if you don't comply, you can lose your federal fundings, which we know public schools need their Title I dollars that are federal funds. This is a firewall to say that the state legislature is creating the standard so that the school districts
or the respective
schools don't have to do it.
The standard is there because I will tell you this is subject to immediate lawsuit because everyone agrees, including the legislative council, for whom opined that this is certainly about to have a reckoning of the Constitution. There's no legal merit for this. There's no precedent for it.
I'm glad to hear you be so worried about the constitutionality of something because
I love the Constitution. Look, you're the one that keeps telling my people that we don't love it. You know, I love the Constitution. institution.
When there was what was it Kitchen versus Utah? There was a lot of people that said that referendums are solid. They've been protected, and you saw
they're in our constitution. Or you guys would have written out the power to the people.
You can always challenge the constitutionality of something, and some of those exercises really do land on what the policy ought to be. This is a debate worth having.
I'm going to tell you, irresponsible, harmful bill.
Girls participating in girls' sports do not need to be, I think, harmed by this broader agenda about transgender.
And so you throw out all the experts who have already dealt with this complex
issue. The experts have not said that this should happen this way and that transgender athletes should be taking the
only
place
the legislature.
Of girls' sports in high school.
You're representing your former body well in the mantra of only the legislature knows.
This is they're getting in front of an issue that is coming. This isn't going away. It's not. I think you got to get that legislative
right.
intent
Politicizing
out early.
Of these children is coming and it's unconscionable.
We're doing
Greg
it before
and Mara
it's
both have daughters. God bless America, and they want the best for them.
Yeah, and they were both high school athletes. I'm telling you right now, my daughter played in high school sports, and I would hope that she would have a chance. I want her to be able to have that experience, so.
Yes, and your daughter plays high school sports as well, right?
She does. She actually plays against the team that this rep coaches for. So
ooh,
there you go.
Interesting.
Ooh,
okay,
intrigue.
I feel like I need
see,
a
that's
mental
a real,
health
That's
after
a
this.
Real problem here. You see this? It all boils down to Mara wants to beat this other team. That's all this
now
is.
Now we know.
All this rhetoric. Oh, my God. Why didn't you come clean with that in the beginning?
Please.
Then we'd know.
Then we'd know. Here's another interesting bill, one they were talking about yesterday, about whether students should get mental health days. I know if I needed a mental health day when I was a kid, my mom would not have allowed that, first of all. But if I did, I think I would have just called in sick. Do we need to specifically allow students, Mara, to say, I need a mental health day. I need to stay home. Or can they just call in and have a sick day?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a little mixed on this. I think what's most important to me is calling out mental health as a health issue, right? And demystifying mental health and demystifying what kids are going through when they're feeling stressed and anxiety. So I really like bringing to the forefront that mental health and health are joined together, that they're one's not more important than the other.
They're all health. Yeah.
They're all health. Now, whether we could just generically ask for a day off, you know, it feels a little micro-government to me, which I'm not a fan of in that way. But having said that, I'm going to lean on demystifying mental health issues and really saying to people, it's okay to use that. I think right now what happens is kids are feeling stress, and how it manifests is they tell their mom they have a headache or they say they're sick. And
yeah.
So let's call what we're feeling. That's really healthy. This need to dial in, you know, two or three more lines of the legislature. If that's the means to the end, so be it. But the end should be, yeah, mental health is a real thing.
It is real. Should we give kids an actual mental health day, or should they just call in sick if they need to stay home and take a deep breath? It's their mom who does
so
it for them.
The scary part is that we are seeing suicide rates amongst teens skyrocket, and it's terrifying. And it's something that I have a hard time getting my head around as our quality of life improves as, you know, time goes on, and you know, I joke that I live in Draper, and I always tease that my kids are Draper soft. You know, Boston strong, but we're Draper soft. These kids grow up without a day of want, and so I just don't understand. And so I have a hard time getting around it, my head around it. What I will say is that we do have to spend and ask for, you know, expertise in this space, and we have to do something because kids are taking their lives, and we can't be okay with that. Does it get down to this health day? All I can do is think about myself when I was in high school. I would be declaring that day every day.
Your life is a mental health day.
I would just be saying, I'm having one of those days. I need a day. I just, you know, the theories always sound good, but how do you practically apply some of these things with our youth, and how do we do that? If someone can tell me that that is a silver bullet in some way, that is going to improve the conditions and the welfare of our children, I'm game, but you better show me how, because I can tell you 1,000 ways how that could be abused, and it won't actually really get to the heart of the issue we're talking about. So, I don't know. I just, pendulum swing, you know, government sometimes does nothing or overreacts, and is this an overreaction? I don't know. It's a tough space for me because I don't understand it entirely, but I think that giving these automatic health, I can't even say it without laughing. I just think There's a lot of kids.
I mean, they're not, to be fair, they're not automatic. It's just that you don't have to pretend it's another issue.
You don't have to pretend you have a stomach ache.
So they're just saying, let's call this out. And I think mainstreaming mental health, Greg, I mean, we were joking, and I'm going to the jokes are fair. But when we talk about, like, I'd have a mental health day, that's not what we're talking about. We are talking about mental health is real. And
I agree,
serious.
It's real, but
let's default to saying let's.
Do we have how many
that.
Days? Is that a 1 day a year thing? Is that a 2 day? I mean, what are we talking?
You're
about?
You're arguing essentially against personal responsibility, and I'm okay with people self-reporting. Greg,
look,
I'm okay with personal responsibility.
I thought this through. I just thought this through. If I was if I was in high school right now, and COVID, one of the symptoms is that you can't taste or smell.
I still can't smell.
By the way, we talked about this before. You're down to like the 1 percentile.
Ooh. Yeah, I know.
You are very special on this. Moment. You are. You're getting the longer that takes, the lower the percentage, which means you're very special. I would just declare every day, I can't taste. I would.
Greg,
you
we
can't
all know
prove
you're
it.
That guy.
You can't
you
prove
know
it.
You're that guy.
I mean, talk about, do we still use the word hooky? Playing hooky, because I would be playing hooky every day with some of these little things you talk about. We talked about playing hooky. I'm just telling you that I just, there's a lot of kids that don't like school for reasons beyond what we're saying, but you don't want to, I mean, I don't know.
Reason number 42, we're not standardizing laws to your behavior.
Have a conversation with your kids, know how they're feeling, and I think parents know best when their kids might need a deep breath and stay home, and when they might need to say, put your big girl panties on and go to school. Because we all have days we don't want to go to work or go to school, but you do. So maybe it starts a conversation in our own homes about, you know, how we're feeling and how we're doing.
Let me ask you too this, and I honestly want to know this. Do we still believe that tough times make people tougher, or do tough times harm people? Because I'm the old school thought that tough times don't last, tough people do. And if you confront adversity and you know, not that it's easy, not to demean it, but when you overcome adversity, you become stronger as a human being. These are life skills and, you know, that you can take with you the rest of your lives. Our young people, should it be so easy?
I think that's generally true, but there are
tough,
real mental illness days where you need, like,
but are tough times not, is that bad now?
I'm with Heidi, as long as we can separate this a little bit from the last conversation, I don't want this to sort of bleed into that. But I will say, you know, healthy kids are resilient kids, not successful, right? When we know from so much information that you shouldn't tell your kid that they're the best and that they're so smart, because eventually being smart runs out. But if you tell kids that they work hard and that's why they're doing well, they never have to run out of hard work.
Right.
And so, I think resilience is a healthy kid. I will say, not to go too far afield on this, but Greg, I was struck when you say we're living in the best times ever. We are, from some markers, right? From some markers of, like, health and sanitation and electricity and being able to be super bougie about everything we do. But I don't know that that's necessarily true. We've lost contact with a lot of things. I think that technology is a gift and a stress. I mean, I think to think that teenage lives aren't more complicated in a way that we don't understand, it isn't quite fair. I mean, I won't go too far afield, but I do remember I lived in Uganda for a while, and I came back, and this very American approach of, like, oh, how was it? I mean, they must have been so unhappy. And I'm thinking, that is such an American thing, to think that wealth and access to Selvin TVs is the key to happiness, right?
I mean, it's
relationships and grounding and space and mental health.
But let's contrast.
I don't know if we're living in the best of times.
Involved in this detail, but look, my mother was a single mother, and she struggled, and she never wanted just a 9-to-5 job. Because she always believed if she had a straight commission job, she'd make $1 zillion. But the problem with commission jobs is you can make nothing as well. So there'd be times where our power would be off, or we wouldn't have food, and we were getting kicked out because my mother didn't pay the rent. So, you know, you learn to adapt, or you learn to, you know, move, you know, be nimble with what's going on around you that's beyond your control. Is that I will tell you that I think that made me a stronger person. My experiences, I made sure my children didn't live through those experiences. I wouldn't want them to, but I don't think that I'm worse for it. I actually think that it helped inform who I am right now. So that's the balance. I don't understand. I'm sincerely asking, are those tough times and those tough experiences that you confront when are no fault of your own when you're young, can that make you a stronger individual? Can you be ready for life and be more prepared when you are confronting those hard times? And I do think those times, when I think back, were tougher than the one the lives that my kids are growing up with.
I know, kids only have to go to school 4 days a week right now. They've got their Fridays at home. It's very relaxing. Mm-hmm.
Did I do my kids a disservice because they've had the power on the whole time? They've never known?
You should at least go watch the box out back.
There's still time. Kick them outside this weekend, Greg.
I know.
See if they like camping in the snow. Okay, we're out of time, but I do want to touch on the fact that we are holding an impeachment trial this week. We had the defense, President Trump's team up today. They only took 2 hours of their allotted 16 hours. Some people say that's a good thing, bad thing. They said they wanted to give the people of America the time back in Congress. Was there anything you heard that touched you or made you think that's going to change minds, or was it what we expected? Greg, you'll get to go first on this one.
I didn't watch it. I've watched little clips here and there, but I don't take it seriously. President Trump is not in office. I don't find it constitutional. I don't see a chief justice sitting on the dais of the Senate. I see the senior Democrat of the Senate. We only had, two in American history before we've had two in the last year. I think it's been politicized. I think this is only to try to find a conviction in the Senate to prevent him from being a political candidate in the future. It certainly has no bearing on him serving as president. And so it's sad. I mean, all this talk about wanting to be unified and bring this country together while we're going through this, I think it's a farce. I don't think it's real. I don't think it's what the separation of powers is meant for. I've watched little bits and pieces, but I've been generally turned off by the whole exercise.
So there's so much to unpack when Greg talks about impeachment. So I have to really pick and choose.
Just agree, and it's very quickly
what I want to go through. And he's in mourning, and you know, I won, he lost, so I want to be benevolent there a little bit.
Rub it in.
But I think a couple interesting things are happening in this insistence that the disgust that it's a political process, and I want to say, right, impeachment is a political action, not a civil or legal action. And I also think it's interesting, Heidi, to what you alluded to. It is a foregone conclusion. So how does one argue, as I would, that it's important even though it is a foregone conclusion? And I think the heart of it for me is the incredible uniqueness of the discussion of an insurrection. Every other impeachment has essentially been about a subsequent behavior, lying, right? The president lied at one point. It was really the topic. We're talking about insurrection. So on face, it's worth the time. I'm going to change this subject to another topic I hope we bring up again, which is Utah Republicans are very relevant to this conversation.
I know, let's list them off here real quick. So Mitt Romney and Mike Lee, first of all, had split votes. Mitt Romney wanted to move forward. Mike Lee didn't. We've seen surveillance in the first day that was never before seen surveillance showing Romney being turned around by a Capitol police officer, Eugene. I've just forgotten his last name. Anyhow, he's famous now. We've seen him. Turning him around, a lot of people saying, essentially saving Mitt Romney's life, whether he saved his life or not. I don't know that we'll ever know because who knows where he was headed. But he made a starring appearance. Mike Lee made a starring appearance yesterday asking for one of his statements to be stricken or non-statements. I'm still a little confused. It was about a phone call with President Trump. And anyhow, I'm not sure what party had stricken. Governor Cox was used actually against the president, showing that governors are saying that he should be impeached. So we've really, here in Utah, just made a big
splash. And one thing I'm going to watch for the future, with our little old state, with our five federal representatives and our governor, we are having the full breadth and depth of the discussion that the Republican Party is having. From do we want to be a moderate? Are we a MAGA nation? Whose vote are we going after? How? What kind of a Republican we are? So I look at these representatives. I'm going to throw Cox in as the sixth one and say, man, Utah is really reflecting the very hard discussion that the Republicans are having right now about who they are and what they stand for.
I'll tell you what the Republican Party is. It's a party of the middle class or the working class. It's a party of, it's the race, color, and creed doesn't matter. We're not into identity politics.
Yeah, you dusted off that mantra.
And I'll tell you this right now. What I learned from the Trump administration is, as much as I have hated the left and the socialization of our society, I hate crony capitalism with all my heart. And I think that crony capitalism and the powerful and the wealthy trying to drive things from afar, the way that we have tech oligarchs and all these things happen, I'm just so tired of it. I think the everyday people that are just trying to make their way have no representation in the climate that we're in. I felt that President Trump tapped into that and really was speaking for the everyday people. And I'm telling you that that's the party I want to see the Republican Party continue to be. I think they need to fight for the Keystone Pipeline and for the jobs that it comes with. I think being energy independent is important. I just saw the Costco gas was $2 a gallon. Gasoline has not gone up in 5 years, maybe 6 years, because we are energy independent. Before President Trump became president, I thought the best we could do is lower our dependence on foreign oil. There are things that, you know, it's a mixed bag. I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to tell you, the everyday people have not been represented by Washington for a long, long time. And I want the Republican Party to be the one that represents the everyday people. And that's the party that I
belong
to. I
would love for that Republican Party to show up, the likes of which we haven't seen.
I'm right here.
But Heidi told us we were over.
It is true. And I'm hoping that when this is all done.
I'm sitting right here, Mara. I'll get you a registration card.
If you haven't seen it, if you've missed the impeachment, the only thing that you should go watch at this point is Democrats have done some really, I don't know what the word to use is, because they're awful sizzle reels of the terrible things that happened inside the Capitol on January 6th. On the opposite end, Republicans have come up with sizzle reels of really awful things that both Republicans and Democrats have said. And when I look at this, I think, is this what our kids should see as the best of America and politics? I think both sides are out of control. The way we speak to each other is nasty. It's calls of violence from both sides. I mean, call a spade a spade. It's all nasty. It all needs to be dialed back. And I hope that we look at that and we all walk away and say, we can do better than this.
Amen.
Yep. Because we really can. And that's why we sit together and have a podcast.
Right.
It's been fun hanging out. Hope everyone has a really, really great Valentine's Day. Almost as fun as this.
That's right.
Thanks for watching, listening, whatever this is. Bye.